Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to My Perfect Console. I'm Simon Parkin, and in each episode I invite a guest to pick the five video games they would like to immortalise on their very own fictional games machine. Perhaps it was the first game they received as a birthday present, or the one that so obsessed them it caused them to fail their exams, or maybe it was the only thing that got them through a difficult breakup. Games, a bit like songs, often become powerfully attached to a particular moment in our lives. When we return to them, they can become warp points to the past. So join me, Simon Parkin, for My Perfect Console. My guest today is a Scottish comedian, writer, television presenter, narrator and Twitch streamer. It was during his final year studying law at the University of Edinburgh, the city in which he grew up, that my guest first tried stand-up comedy. At the Edinburgh Fringe Festival that year, he reached the final as the Chortle Student Comedian of the Year, taking second place to Joe Lycett. After being spotted at a gig, my guest then became one of the main presenters for Children's BBC, working alongside various puppet sidekicks, an experience that later formed the basis for his sitcom, Buffering. After writing and presenting shows for the channel, in 2014 he was nominated as Best Children's Presenter by BAFTA. And the following year, my guest's voice became familiar to millions when he became the narrator of ITV2's reality show Love Island. As well as appearing as a contestant on the 8th series of Taskmaster, my guest also hosts a popular Twitch channel on which he plays video games. Welcome, Ian Sterling.
Thank you, Simon. I'm sure other people have commented on it, but what a thorough introduction.
Oh, thanks,
man.
Do
you do that when you have like friends around at dinner parties and stuff?
I was a little nervous reading that out in front of you as the voice of a generation, as the Evening Standard described you.
Yeah, it feels a bit much. Quotes like that are obviously really flattering, but obviously people don't really know that other people do your press releases, and I think it's more for your mental well-being. If I personally, I'm like, well, I'm not the voice of a generation. I'm like, that would be like David Attenborough or someone. But at the same time, it would be mad not to put the nicest things that people have said about you in your press release. It's an absolute quagmire. The sort of voice inside my head that hates me and everything I've done that we've all got.
Sure.
Is like, what are you doing?
Shut up.
Putting that on a poster. Shut. You're not the voice of it. I'm barely the voice of my own house, let alone of a generation. But then the other side of me is going, yeah, I'm brilliant. Come and see me on tour, please, for the love of God.
Yeah, please, please. Please. Yeah, I'd like to hear you doing the voiceover for Planet Earth, actually. That would be slightly sarcastic quips about animals.
The tiger has eaten What do they eat? The deer, whatever the African deer is.
Buffalo.
Buffalo. Oh, a tiger eating a buffalo. This is the blind leading the blind. We better get onto video games.
Yeah,
we've had because this is a disaster.
So, Ian, you got a well known face. Lots of people either like grew up watching you on TV or watch their children watching you. But your voice is, I think it's fair to say, like even more recognisable. What's it like living with a famous voice? Do you always get hassled at like the checkout or when you're trying to buy insurance and stuff?
Yeah, I was actually reminded today. I was talking to my friend Steve, Steve Bougier, a very funny comedian, and wrote Buffering, my sitcom, with me.
Yeah.
We were once sober in a kebab shop in, I think it was Bristol, but it was like a very student city. And then when you do stand-up sometimes, you finish quite late at night. So you end up in towns at like 1-2 in the morning. And obviously we hadn't eaten. So the only place was a kebab shop filled like drunk students. So I had like my cap on, hood up.
Sure.
I don't get recognised a lot, but the last thing you want to do is recognise at 2 in the morning in a kebab shop sober. And I'd sort of got away with it. And then the guy, you get your meat in the pitta and then they ask you what you want in it. And I was like, oh, garlic sauce, please. Chili sauce. And as I was speaking, you could see like meerkats, everyone sort of turning round. And then the thing that makes my mate Steve laugh, I don't remember this, but he said that I ordered salad and that's when someone went, I think that's the Love Island guy. I'm like, I'd like some salad like that. So then I'm trying to shut up. But then he went to put tomatoes in my kebab. So I'm then like trying to like semi-whisper, but not speak too loud. No tomatoes. Whilst trying not to let the other students like recognise what I was saying. It was, yeah. Me and my mate Steve's absolutely pissing himself on the on the kebab shop floor. So it's a weird one. I can sort of, I can sort of get away with day-to-day life without being recognised or anything. I say get away with it. Like it's not a lovely thing that people know your stuff. It's great.
Sure.
But I can't be loud anywhere, basically.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Football matches, rugby matches, that sort of thing. My neighbours all know me because I stream on Twitch. And obviously when you play video games, you're very loud, especially when you're playing it to a crowd.
Yeah.
So they just all know me as like the shouty, sweary guy. Every weekend when I'm playing Weekend League on FIFA, I'm just shouting at my telly.
I won't ask you loads of questions about this, but just from a comedy point of view, I'm interested, how does like recording for that show work, Love Island? Do you turn up and you're given an edit and a script, or do you improvise a bit?
Yeah, I do it in this very spot.
Uh-huh.
This is sort of semi, this is where me and my wife do our podcast, but off season it becomes a mini sound booth. This table rises up. It's very exciting. And we get given the episode for that day, but it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so the show's probably about 10 to 15 minutes longer than what it will be for the final broadcast. So there's a little bit of stuff. Something might happen that we write a funny joke for and they're like, oh yeah, that conversation's not happening anymore. No, by 6 o'clock, once they've done a bit more of an edit on it, they call it the finishing.
Right.
So it's basically the final thing. And then I get in at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, done by 6:30. And then we just have to sort of, that's where the gaming comes in, really. I just sit and play video games until about 8 o'clock when they say I can go home.
Right.
That's why it's nice the last few years I've been here. I've actually played genuinely so much more computer games because I'm in the office with a couple of hours to kill. Whereas before I was in Spain, sort of just wandering around it was an abandoned brick storage area is what they use. Mercenary? No, that's someone that goes to fight, isn't it?
Masonry.
Masonry area. Anyway, it doesn't matter, does it? But that's where I was in Spain, so I had no
idea. Was that your booth in Spain, you mean?
That was my booth, yeah. There's like 500 of us in a bunch of porter cabins. It was sort of looked like an episode of Mad Max.
Yeah, right,
like,
jeez.
But with middle class London media types instead of like Mad Max people.
Nice. And now, just lastly on this, so the culture's changed quite a lot since like 2015 when you started doing that show. And
massively,
I think it's fair to say, you know, audiences are a bit more sympathetic or like even protective of reality TV stars. And, you know, there's a lot more awareness of like the toll being on one of those shows can take on individuals after the show finishes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, has that sort of changed the way you approach the narration or think about your tone?
It is something I think about. I think I got lucky in the sense that me and my friend Mark, right from the get-go, were sort of like, we knew we couldn't be, we never said anything nasty about any of them. Partly because we were like, well, where'd you go from there? The only time we're particularly cruel, we've got a sort of unwritten rule that is like we'll make jokes about them when it's something they've done that's particularly reprehensible on the show. So like, for example, there's like a guy kissed a couple of girls when he was with somebody else and sort of said, oh, I was just, it meant I could, I definitely knew you were the one, right? Which is a bit of a sort of moral cop-out. So then we made jokes for the next 2 days. It's like, oh, he couldn't decide whether to sit on the sofa or sit on the sun lounger. So he got off with both of them. And then, and do you know what I mean? So
right,
we
right.
So yeah, we'd met. And it was sort of a happy coincidence, really, that that is what we did. But we made a decision pretty early on that we never sort of went, oh, you idiot. Do you know what I mean? It was never really something we did. It felt a bit like that's... We also were always looking for stuff that other people wouldn't get to. Twitter's brilliant because it's made us work harder, but it also, it's like sometimes we'll see something on Twitter and we'll be like, well, not so much now. We've sort of, I mean, I, like a lot of people, I sort of don't really agree with that. I never agree with that place anyway. And then there's lots of other elements.
Definitely
to it
not
now.
Now.
Aren't they? Yeah. But like, Jimmy, you'd see a meme and you'd be like, oh, that's annoying because I thought that. But now lots of people have clearly thought that because it's a meme. So it makes us work a bit harder, I think. Which is annoying in some places, but hopefully it's kept us fresh, I think.
Well, speaking of fresh and comedy, you've got a tour that you're going on next year. Relevant is...
Love. That was lovely. That was beautifully done.
Thanks,
that was
buddy.
Really beautifully done. That was seamless.
It's called Relevant. What came first, Ian, the title or the routine?
The vibe, the feeling came first, I suppose. That's uh-huh. What came first. The sort of worry of like, what am I now? Where do I sit on this mortal coil on this earth?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like that sort of like, I think I sit in an interesting place for comedy in that I'm sort of confused and worried and in awe of and don't understand modern culture and modern pulp culture, but because of Love Island, I'm like, I am it. So do you know what I mean? I feel like my dream audience would be like, if a fat, like an older guy came with like his 17-year-old son, because I'm sort of making jokes about sort of like this, when I'd done like the roast of the Sidemen and like, oh, the KSI and all this like YouTube stuff, but from the angle of like, what is it? Why does it exist? And like, you know, I try and do, me and my wife do that. I remember in lockdown, me and my wife could be doing these dances on TikTok.
Right.
And we had 2 years of lockdown. I didn't speak to anyone. And then for about a year, I'd written a sitcom. I'd had a special out on Amazon Prime. And people were literally coming up to me in the street being like, those dances with your wife, man, are so funny. It's like the most famous thing I did in all of lockdown. This is absolutely insane. So yeah, it's about that. It's about the sort of ever-changing world of where I sit in it, both like culturally and technology and daft stuff. Like you go and do you know that TikTok's got a built-in filter that makes your teeth whiter?
I didn't know that, no.
As standard,
right.
As standard. The idea being people film themselves on TikTok, they go, I look brilliant on TikTok, and then they do more TikTok.
Right. I'm truly myself on TikTok. That's what they want you to do.
That's exactly what I look like in real life. Well, that filter just makes my beard look more grey. So I'm like, this app hates me. So yeah, stuff like that, just silly stuff like that. So hopefully people like it.
Is it all written or are you still working on it?
We're 5 months away, so I'm about 35, 40 minutes in. And then I like to have, for a tour, I like to have about an hour of show. And then anyone that's seen me live or sort of knows what I'm like as a person, that's an hour long show that after distractions takes about an hour 20.
Right.
By the time someone's wearing a t-shirt or someone asks me a question or it's not so much heckles, it's more I'll just notice something going on. So it's about an hour 20 with distractions, and then my mate Steve at the start. So you get two hours of comedy for your money, including a break. But the break's brilliant as well, isn't it?
It is.
I'll
good
try
yeah
and do something funny during the break is what I try and do.
So you've got, I mean, like you say, you're sort of, you're both establishment in the sense that you're on like mainstream TV, terrestrial TV, and everyone knows you for that, but you're also, you know, stand-up comic and you've got a sitcom and you're on Twitch and all of these things. So you've got all of that mix in your audience. Are you thinking about your video game Twitch audience being there, or do you think they're not going to come out?
No, I do. Do you know what? Twitch is really interesting. in the height of lockdown, Twitch, which I enjoyed at the time. I wonder how it felt if it carried on, but Twitch was obviously pretty much my main job in lockdown.
Right, yeah.
Especially, I'd done a live stream on a Sunday that was sort of like, I think at one point it was basically the most watched FIFA stream, do you mean, at that time, and on a weekend, Saturday, Sunday, because of there's a competitive mode on FIFA called FUT Champs. So weekend is sort of the high traffic time of FIFA. So I'm not doing that to be like, oh, look how great I am. I just mean like it was a really massive part of my life that for a long time. Now it's a lot more hobbyist. So I don't get particularly large viewers or anything, but the people I do are so regular. And actually, it's probably the most common thing that's like shouted out to me or that people backstage or would wait for me at, say, stage door or something, because I think those people know me the best, weirdly.
Right, yeah, it's intimate, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Alfie Brown, who's a fantastic stand-up comedian, he described Twitch as a long-form social media, which I really like.
Lovely, yeah.
And I think Twitch is actually the most true to me of anything that I do. Because I'm just playing computer games for like 2 to 3 hours a day. And if I'm in a bad mood, if there's something happening, if I'm having a delivery of the house that day and I'm stressed about it, you can't play FIFA and pretend that's not happening.
Yeah, right.
I had like loads of tech issues when lockdown first happened and I was trying to get the internet working. I ended up having to have this like 50 meter Ethernet cable throughout the whole house. That was 2 or 3 times the Twitch stream just ended when my wife was like, we can't have this being cable running through the house anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet she loved that.
And then it turned out there was actually an Ethernet cable in my room drilled through the wall from the previous owner that I didn't know about. So obviously now I still get people coming up to me being like, how's your internet? Because like, I just had such a nightmare for about 6 months. So that's why I love Twitch. I think it is the most true to me because it's just me talking, being myself for 2 to 3 hours.
Brilliant.
But sadly now I sort of only pop on very sporadically and at random times, which obviously makes it impossible to track.
Right,
so you're
never
going to sort of build up any sort of momentum. But that's not what I'm there for, if you know what I mean. I'm there to sort of meet the few people that happen to be on and say hello. And yeah, I would love it to go back to even just like once a week having like a regular thing that I could just pop on and do. And hopefully my schedule will allow for that at some point.
Yeah, yeah. Right, we better come to the premise of the podcast. So I've asked you to pick the 5 video games you want to put on your perfect, ideal, fictional console. You pick 5 great games. Do you want to tell us about your first one from 2014? What's the game and why do you love it?
The one from 2014?
Yeah.
Would that be what?
It's the one with things that we're not allowed to call zombies, but they're zombies.
Oh!
No.
Sorry. No.
It's a Last of Us Remastered.
Last of Us Remastered.
That's the one.
It's my favourite storyline of any game. I think it's arguably the best written and performed storyline in a game. This is one of the few ones that I imagine you've had a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair
assumption? Yeah, I had it a couple of times, either the first one or the second.
The first one's the first one is infinitely better than the second. Anyone that's picking the second is a maniac. And it's not that it's bad, but it isn't as good as the first.
Right, right.
Simon?
Well, I like both of them. They both got, I think Glenn Moore picked the second one. Do you know Glenn?
He knows his stuff, to be fair, but he'll have done it to be different.
Right, okay.
No, maybe not. He does. Glenn knows a lot more about videos than me. I mean, I didn't. You said zombies in 2014 and I still couldn't remember which one it was. I'd said, so I've really not got a leg to stand on. I just loved it. I think it looks so beautiful. It's one of the most caringly remastered games I've ever played. You can tell they've really taken the extra yard. The part where they're going through the main city and all the animals from the zoo have escaped and they're walking past the giraffes and all that stuff, if you remember that bit.
It is, yeah.
Then they go down into the basement of that building, there's like all the clickers in the water. It's just it's compared to the original game, it's like wow, you've painstakingly gone through this, like, so fair play to you, sort of thing.
Did you watch the TV show recently?
Yes, I did. It's great.
Yeah,
I didn't think I was going to like it, but it's the TV show's great. Last of Us 2 is unbelievable. I mean, Last of Us and Last of Us 2 are... The Last of Us 2 would probably be on... I'm making fun of people. Last of Us 2 would probably be on this list if it wasn't for the fact Last of Us is.
Right, yeah.
They've sort of, to me anyway, they feel a bit like Messi, Ronaldo. They're up there in like sort of like... they're up there with like Final Fantasy VII and like Mario Brothers and stuff in terms of like absolute of their era iconic,
right? True
games,
yeah, absolutely.
So I don't know what else there is to say. Do you know what else I loved on it? The online mode, the 4v4. Did you ever play that?
No, but we had.
It's honestly brilliant.
Yeah. One of my previous guests talked about that and how much she loved that. So yeah.
It's the best part of the game. Genuinely, I'm like, it was such an amazing part of the game. I wonder if you went on now to try and play it, there'd be enough people on it to like,
yeah, maybe
even get a game started.
Yeah, it's always sad when they turn the servers off for that kind of thing. It feels like the end.
Yeah, I wonder if they're still up. It was so good, and it's sort of like it didn't have that sort of like Call of Duty when you go online and you're just dead within 6 seconds, and you parachute in. There's people like taking it with rockets as you're coming out of the plane and stuff. So it just felt like a nice pace to it. They always got the balance really nice in terms of like you didn't have like infinite ammo, but it didn't also feel like you were sort of like scrimping and saving. There's just like so many memorable moments, even like I've forgotten what's the young lass's name again, I forget.
Ellie,
of course. I love that when Ellie with the bow and arrow and you're like going to get the medicine, the penicillin or whatever. It's just like, because when you first go Ellie, I was like, oh god, I always hate the secondary characters in these things.
I see, right, yeah.
They've sort of got annoying game mechanics that just are there just to make it feel a bit different, but it was really fun doing that. Yeah, I just love it. And like I said, I was just so excited from when it came out as a TV show. I was like to my wife, because I'm slowly trying to convince her to get into games. And she's like, oh, I don't want to watch. I've got her to watch like June. And she was like, I don't want to watch a video game. And I was like, oh, it's actually not a great storyline or film, annoyingly. And then the Last of Us was just brilliant.
She got into it.
She, yeah, well into it.
Oh, that's
yeah,
good.
Loved it. Nice. Loved it. And then and then I watched the Colleen Rooney documentary as a sort of
right as that your part of the,
which I actually is one of my favorite things I've seen in years as well. Now
they haven't made a video game of that yet, but they should.
Oh my god! Imagine a game of Wagatha Christie. I would play it. That would be massive on Twitch. The Wagatha Christie game.
It's so weird. Yeah.
It should be like a Sims DLC or something.
Yes, that would totally work. Oh my gosh, we'll get on the phone to EA. Right, so Ian, tell me about your story. So you grew up in Edinburgh, was I right with that?
Yes, up in Edinburgh the whole life, all the way through uni as well, yeah.
Mm. What was that like? What were you like as a kid?
Odd, a bit odd. Like, my mum always says whenever she comes to see me stand up, it's a bit much for a nursery, but at nursery, the nursery teacher told my mum that I would never walk into a room with a glass of wine and be able to talk to somebody.
Oh, wow.
Which just shows you the sort of harsh realities kids dealt with in the 90s, yeah, really.
That's
imagine saying that. Imagine saying that now.
You wouldn't have got that in a Glasgow nursery, I don't think.
Nah. Yeah, your kid will probably be unable to talk in public. Anyway, see him tomorrow, basically is what happened. Wild.
Wow.
But quiet, loved my video games. And also they weren't, it's sort of annoying. I loved graphic novels and video games, which were like, you would get beaten up for liking them when I was a kid.
Right.
And now everyone likes them. Imagine, I don't even think, I'm trying to think, Master System and that wouldn't have even had like Marvel games, because Marvel...
No.
I'm trying to think.
There was like a Marvel fighting game for PlayStation, but nothing before that.
Yeah,
think,
PlayStation
yeah.
1 would be the first time it'd come in. Yeah, there's sort of like Tekken ripoffs and stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah, there'd be nothing in my... But if that did exist, you would absolutely get beaten up for playing it. Whereas now it's like, it's the coolest thing. Like, you know what I mean? It's the coolest thing in the world to be good at FIFA or whatever.
Right, yeah. Strange, isn't it?
See, I liked video games and I sort of liked And then I got into sort of sport a bit, but not really. And then it wasn't until sort of university where I found stand-up. At university, I've sort of found my tribe, so to speak, like my people.
Mm-hmm. What made you decide to do law then?
So I went, the sort of school I went to, I was the only boy that in my year that went to university. And because of my school, they had a sort of like, what's the word for it? Like an affirmative action thing to like get people from my school to go to university. So I, with my grades from my school, I could do anything basically.
Nice.
Do you know what I mean? They were like, you go wherever you want, because you're the one that wants to do it.
So you decided to stay in Edinburgh.
So I stayed in Edinburgh. I mean, which sort of gives you an idea of what where I grew up was like.
Right.
With these grades, you can do whatever you want. And I went, brilliant. I will go to the place 10 minutes on a bus. and that was exciting, is the most exciting thing there. Do you know what I mean? Town.
Right.
Going into town was mad. I'd never done it really.
Right, okay.
I loved it. And at uni, I met people that were like me in that they worked hard, but they also liked to drink and all that. Do you know what I mean? Like, they were a bit naughty, but they would never cross the line. Because that was the thing about my school. There's some brilliant people from there, but they didn't care. Like, I don't mean they didn't care as in they didn't care. I mean, they just didn't, like, when you pulled the pin, it would just, things would kick off.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas all of a sudden, I met these people that were a bit mad, but they also went, right, okay, we're about to get in trouble, yeah? Do you know what I mean? And that was sort of, that's been my vibe for my whole life.
Really. That was more who you were.
Yeah, and I found them, and then weirdly, I also found like stand up, and I sort of and that's when I was like, oh yeah, I love all this.
How did you find stand up then? Like, you know, you're doing, going along to your law lectures. What took you down there?
Edinburgh University. I've got a thing called the Edinburgh Improverts, which is like an improvised comedy thing. And around the time I was doing it, there's a guy called Humphrey Kerr. He was the leader of it, who's now weirdly quite famous as like the Wrexham FC. He's like Wrexham FC's like...
Really?
Chair manager or something. Now, he basically, he's one of the guys that got all the Hollywood lads into Wrexham. He's an actor in his own right and he's amazing. And like Miles Jupp had just come through the Improverts, and there's like David Reed and Tom Tuck, and these guys were all like big names in the Edinburgh comedy circuit at the time. So it's dead cool. So I just gave it a go, like, and it never really went anywhere. I was okay, but never great. But that gave me the bug. And then from then, I went to Edinburgh Fringe a few times to do, like, sketch shows with a friend. And then when everyone else gave up, so I was on my own. So then I just sort of had, I'd done stand-up sort of out of necessity, as in there was no, do you know what I mean? I couldn't, I basically done improv, it's a very, like, old man thing. Like, I'd done improv with, like, 10 people. Then sketch comedy with just one other person, and then eventually I was just left on my own. I'm like, what are they called? What's it? I'm like Panic at the Disco. Just slowly whittled down to one person, sort of accidentally. So yeah, and then I done stand up, and then like very quickly into stand up, I done that Chortle thing that you mentioned.
Yeah,
that I came second. Joel Isaac came first, and I came second. And then it just snowballed from there, really. And then university became very much a second option, and I just sort of ploughed on.
Yeah, that often happens. Right, let's come to your second game then. So
I'm going to get it first time this time. I'm not going to mess this one up.
Okay, this is a football game.
I've got it. I've got it. So it's Earthworm Jim, this one. And no, a FIFA, but very I've got very specifically FIFA 17.
People say football never changes.
EA Sports. It's in the game.
We see it differently. Football has changed.
The best FIFA, if you're
asking. Yeah, why is 17 the best then?
I feel like the gameplay and stuff from FIFA 17 to FIFA 19 is the best FIFA ever was. There's sort of like, there's a lot of meta elements to FIFA that can be like broken nowadays and are broken. A lot of people, and due with YouTube channels and all that, once the meta's discovered, you end, if you play at a high enough level. Not that I'm not saying I'm professional, but don't forget, I play like 15 hours a week and have done since I was like 12. So like right. By default, I'm half decent.
Sure.
Everyone does the same tactics, 17, 18, maybe not so much 19. But then the main reason is 17 was when FUT Champions started.
Booth.
Which is, for those that don't know, a competitive game mode that's basically used to qualify you for professional tournaments, but you get to play 40 games. Well, in FIFA 17, you played 40 games and you could only play them on Saturday and Sunday. That's 20 minutes a game plus loading into the game, like you do the maths.
Wow.
I would do it every week. So I was doing, I would basically get up at like 11 o'clock in the morning, play FIFA until I left for my gigs about 6, get home from my gigs and just play it some more.
No way.
Now they've changed it. It's now Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and they've dropped the amount of games to 20. It went down to 30, then it went down to 20. I think they sort of, EA sort of done the maths and went, this is actually dangerous what we're doing to people.
They're getting their stat readouts and can see they're ruining lives.
Yeah, I think it was getting quoted on like divorce. I think there's genuine divorce papers,
right,
where they cite like guys like just playing Football Manager and FIFA. I would like to give an honorary shout out to Championship Manager.
Yeah, classic.
And I use that words deliberately because that was I played Championship Manager in my sort of like last year of high school when I'd already got the grades I needed for uni. I'd done, like every football fan's done, I took like Hibernian to the Champions League final and stuff.
Yes,
which,
yeah.
Which you've got to love to do. And also any man or woman of my age, sort of mid-30s to 30, maybe 30 to 40 will have been alive or been in the height of gaming during the Pro Evo Revolution.
Absolutely,
it lasted
yeah.
for about 2 or 3 years. But what year? I'm trying to think about 2005, I reckon, to about earlier, 2004 to about 2007, I reckon, maybe.
Yeah, when you either backed one or the other, the Konami's football game. Or...
Yeah, and it was the only time Pro Evo would, like, manage to be a decent thing. And even FIFA then had to introduce classic and alternative controls.
Yes.
So that Pro Evo players could play FIFA. Because I would have been used an alternative, but now I've played FIFA so much, I've gone back.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but for a long time, I'd been old. You know what I mean? I'd have been shooting with square like a madman.
Yeah.
So yeah, honorary mentions to Championship Manager and Pro Evo, but for me, it's FIFA. And obviously on Twitch, I'm mainly a FIFA streamer.
Yeah. Well, they've
dropped, if you don't agree with...
They've dropped FIFA now, haven't they, from the name of the game this year?
EAFC
That's the
it's
one.
Called now. They've lost FIFA. I actually don't... This is the first year I've not been properly caught up with it all, but I don't quite know what's happened. And it doesn't seem to have affected the players or anything.
I think FIFA just asked for too much money for the license.
But also, I don't know what the license got them, because they seem to have all the players and all the strips and everything. Strips. Kits. Something like my dad. They've got all the football colours on the game at the minute. I don't really see what the fuss is about. Yeah, they've got the kit. Yeah, I don't know what FIFA was bringing to the party, really. They seem to be good riddance, really. I thought the game would have got... I would like to add as well, I always like... But although I do stream it and I do spend a bit of money on it, I always like to have the element of the game of buying packs, the money you can spend on buying packs and opening packs, it is gambling. I'd like to make that... My opinion is it is gambling. I'd like to make that very clear. I don't think that young people should be spending money on FIFA. I don't think that means they shouldn't be allowed to play it. I think if you're a parent who doesn't understand gaming and your kid's got FIFA, I think you should look into it very carefully. And it always sat uncomfortable with me, but it does feel like it's getting more and more that way. Like there's just little things they do at the minute. Like a lot of the packs you buy now are like untradeable players, which doesn't sound like much to the layman amongst us, but it basically means before you could buy players that were like tradable on a market so you could get coins, which means you'd have more coins to buy more players, whereas now you sort of like they make the packs untradeable, which means you open them and if you don't get the player you want, there is nothing else you can do with those cards,
right, yeah.
So you're sort of stuck. The only option is to, well, I'll open more then,
yeah, buy another, yeah, exactly.
In its current form, Ultimate Team, where you build your dream team with the packs, should be 18 plus.
Yeah. Yeah, I think regulations are going to catch up with them along the lines of what you said there. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I hope that's another thing is you want to be on the right side of history, so to speak. Like, I want to be able to turn around when it does happen, and it will, and be like, I did say.
Yeah.
But also, it's difficult, right? Because it's my favourite game of all. Like, I played FIFA 99.
Versus.
I played FIFA 96, yeah. In fact. And also, anyone that's listening to this that's over the age of 30 will know, it's a video game that's online that I can actually beat people. I tried Call of Duty in lockdown for about 3 months. I loved it, but, like, couldn't keep up. Yeah. Fortnite, loved it. But again, people were building, like, the Taj Mahal, and I was hiding in a bush, like, do you know what I mean? So it was just... FIFA, I could genuinely go toe-to-toe with a 14-year-old, which is, you can't say that about many computer games. You can't say that.
No.
Full stop.
No, no. We'll leave it in, but...
I contextualised it quick enough. I realised what it sounded like, and I gave it enough context quickly enough that it's fine.
We'll clip that out.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And So tell me, when did you get talent spotted by the BBC?
I was at a gig in London. I was at a place called the Comedy Store, and I got spotted by a girl called Christina, who was, back in the day, Ed the Duck.
Yes, it is.
She was technically the voice. Her arm was Ed.
I see.
And I was going to say she was a voice of Ed the Duck, but she had one of those whistles that hunters use that sound like a duck.
Right, right, right.
And it was after, I sort of do very gross, like, adult stand-up. Do you know what I mean? It's not like kids stand-up.
Sure.
And she sort of was like, oh, do you want to stay and audition for kids' TV? And I generally thought it was a wind-up. Because it was like 10 o'clock at night on a Friday, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I went home, back up to Edinburgh. I was in my final year of uni at that point, I think. Yeah, final year of uni. And then the Comedy Store got in touch and went, the BBC had been in touch. Do you want to audition for kids' TV? And I said, not particularly. But then the BBC said, when are you next in London? And I was down at the Comedy Store again doing the Paramount Funniest Student Paramount, which is now Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Funniest Student. I came runner-up in that one as well. Joe Lycett, the Chortle, I came a runner-up to Tom Rosenthal in the Paramount one. And they said, do you want to audition for kids' TV? They said they pay for my train and stuff. And I was obviously skint, so I was like, yeah, cool. Done the audition. And then, like, a few months later, when I was studying for my final exams, they were like, do you want to come to London and do kids' TV? I was made up at that point. And then, yeah, they gave me a couple of months to, like, do my exams, and then I came straight to London. I think I had my last exam on a Thursday. I got on the train to London on Sunday, and I recorded my first TV thing on a Monday.
Oh, that's incredible, isn't it?
Wild, in hindsight. Yeah, wild. I missed my first ever live link. I don't think I've told anyone that. Because I'm obviously used to working normal jobs. So they said, oh, we're live at 9. But they obviously had worked with proper presenters before, so they just assumed I'd know what that meant. So I arrived at 9, but because I was a student vibes, so I was like, came at like 3 minutes past 9. Like 3 minutes late, not the end of the world. Obviously the link had finished. It was live telly. So they were like, where have you been? You didn't... They just thought I wasn't coming. Because they were like, you're live at 9, so we thought you'd get here at like 7, hair and makeup, learn your script, yada, yada, yada. I was like, well, No one told me that.
No one defined the terms for me.
You said live at 9.
Yeah.
Here I am, live.
Let's go.
Let's get into this. So yeah, then we had a week of like teaching me sort of what telly was. And then
that's like,
oh,
so
you
funny.
Registered for tax. I was like, what? They were like, oh, for God. Right.
I had a similar thing, like, because when I first started writing about video games for magazines, I went in and met an editor and he was like, great, we've got you on this review. Are you okay to supply the grabs? I had no idea what grabs are. Within me, it's like screenshots for the games. This is before you could just press a button on your PS5 controller and take a picture.
Yeah, I could imagine that like 10, 15 years ago, that was an absolute pain in the butt.
Right. So yeah, completely. But I had no idea what grabs meant. And it's ungoogleable. You can't go like magazine grabs and it tells you what it is. So I just went home and was like, I said, oh yeah, I'll be fine to do that. But I had no idea. Anyway.
What did you do? Did you have to ask them what is a grab? I'm actually wondering what happened. Or did he just...
I think I asked someone else. Yeah, who is like a freelancer, what it meant. And then I was like, oh, no, I can't supply grabs. I could have to go back.
I'm not a wizard, I'm afraid.
I have none of the equipment for that.
Yeah, what would you have done it with? Because I don't even think the HD60 would even have existed or anything like that, would they? Like, you couldn't even...
They had like special PCs. I mean, this is such a tangent, sorry. But they had like special PCs.
No, I love it. No, this is folk that are listening to a podcast like this is I love this.
Yeah, well, Future Publishing, which was the publisher that it was, they had like a little tech team, IT team, that would make PCs specifically that you played your consoles through and then you could hear the space bar. But they like cost $2,000 or something. It was really, really expensive and I couldn't afford it or anything. So
mad. Not as mad.
So I had to go into the office and do it by hand. Yeah. Anyway.
Jesus.
Back to your story, Ian. So I was reading there's a great interview with you in the Independent from earlier this year, I think, and you wrote about that time, like when you're doing the children's TV presenting, I'm 22 and I want to be Bill Hicks and I'm dressed as a ballerina talking to a puppet dog, it's not ideal.
Yeah,
I think like people can't necessarily relate to like what you were doing, but they can relate to that situation of like doing work that's sort of related to their dream but also can feel a bit like it's just slightly too tangential, leading you away from it.
Yeah, I think it's also the length of time you do it for, right? Like you do I'll do this to get to here, and then all of a sudden you're there, and then you can feel that path just slowly. Like, I'm carrying down, this path was meant to cut me back onto this motorway, and I'm literally now so far away from where I need to be. And there's two thoughts with that. I do feel like, one, my early time at Kids TV, I had such a nice time, but I was so young and like wanted to be cool and like respected. Like, it's mad the stuff I got jealous of. I got jealous of like comedians that didn't have jobs. Like my comedians that were skin, I weirdly was jealous of them. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I was jealous of them like going to the cinema during the day and talking about stand up and having to get a bus to gigs because they had no money. And I was like, well, I've got like, I was doing kids TV, like I wasn't like meant, it was like a normal paid job basically.
Right, yeah.
A well paid job, but not like, I mean, I'm not like a movie star. But because I was so blinkered into what I wanted. So like, I suppose the point I'm trying to make is, one, you totally have to focus on what you want and you have to go out and get it. But I do worry, especially this day and age where it's like everything's accessible at your fingertips and it's like there's so many success like YouTubers that are like, I'm going to get to a million followers in a fortnight and all this. And I feel like if you blinker into what you want, you miss all the like amazing stuff that goes by. Because when I was doing Kids TV, like it was class. Like I was live on television every day.
Yeah.
5 days a week. I miss live TV so much and it'll probably never happen again. Like,
right.
Because who's watching live TV? Like, why would you? Just turn on... There's literally, Twitch is literally a thing dedicated to live stuff if you want it.
Yeah. And what a training you're getting as well, I guess, being in that situation day in, day after, having to be in control.
I was doing 25 minutes of telly every day for 5 days a week for 4 years. Like,
it's hard to see the good in it, I suppose, when you're in it and you're like, this isn't...
Well, I think it's a mixture. Hard to see the good in it when you're in it, and also I'm 21 and I do not understand that world.
So, right.
But by that I mean, one, I don't understand how important what I'm doing is, and two, I don't understand how lucky I am because it just happened. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not that great, and I'm here. Do you know what I mean? I'd literally done a couple of gigs, couple of auditions, and now I'm like doing this. It must be easy. Anyone can do it. And obviously, as you go down the road. And then as I left that job and tried to get other jobs and didn't, then I was like, oh my God, it's actually impossible to get jobs in this industry. You were so lucky. So I think it is important. I think it's important to be focused and know what you want from life and have that bigger picture, but don't do it to the detriment of what's going on in your life right at this minute. Yeah. And also what you're doing might be, there's a reason for it. Like, if I'm being completely honest, I'm a good stand-up comedian. And I sort of doesn't sit with me even saying that. But the reason I'm saying that is I'm not the best ever. But I tell you what, weirdly, I might be one of the best people ever to host kids TV with a puppet. Like, the stuff, do you know what I mean? I might weirdly be one of the best people. I sort of inadvertently created a way to do a funny voiceover on reality TV. It was a niche thing to create, but I did it.
Yeah.
So maybe all this stuff around stand that was meant to happen because that was my, like, you know, thing I was meant to do or whatever. So yeah, I don't know. It's funny you mention that, Cole, because I think about that a lot where I'm like, I hope that didn't come across as like ungrateful or anything.
No,
but I suppose the 22-year-old me was ungrateful, but because I felt like it was getting in the way of what I really wanted to do and achieve.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Right, Ian, let's come to your third game, which is from 2018. So do you know this one or do you need a clue?
2018. So I do know one's from 2020.
Yeah.
I know that one. Cause it was,
and then the one from this year.
The one from this year. Oh, yeah, of course, that one. So that, A Way Out.
There we go.
Gosh. Best ending of a video game ever. Have you played it?
Is this the like Prison Break game?
Yeah, it's based on. Now maybe I got to, but did you play it with your mate?
I did play it with a friend. Yeah, over online during lockdown. In fact,
were you screaming at each other at the end?
So good, like,
almost blaming each other.
Yeah,
it's the best reveal at the end of a video game ever. I loved it so. Like, I loved it so much. It's based on what's the famous prison in San Francisco.
Wait, Alcatraz?
Alcatraz. It's a real life escape that happened in Alcatraz. Yeah. But basically, it's a two-player game and it has to be played two-player. Literally, you can't do it any other way. And you're two lads escaping a prison. And it's like, a lot of it's quite, the gameplay itself can be a bit monotonous, I think. Like, there's no skill cap on it. Is that a fair thing to say? Like, as in, you can keep watch, so one of you will keep watch while the other one digs a hole in their cell, sort of thing.
Or hide in the laundry and you get pushed around by the other one. That's one of the scenes, isn't
it? That sort of thing. But like, it's all very much like, to dig, you just roll R stick.
Yeah.
And like, do you know what I mean? And you stop rolling R stick when the police officer walks past you. And basically the only way you get caught is if you get bored of rolling the R stick, so you keep doing it until he catches you.
Exactly, yeah.
But the storyline is really compelling. If you get through those bits, the idea of it is absolutely amazing. If you're playing it with someone you're, like, obviously friendly with, it doesn't take ages to complete. And in the end, the end is so good.
I remember laughing so much in that game as well. Because, like you say, it's a little bit awkward and chonky in places. But if you're playing with, like, a good buddy, it's very funny. Like, when you get caught repeatedly for little things.
Yeah, we had a bit. There's one bit. I mean, none of it's spoilers because it's not, the storyline's all over the place. And also, I think you get a different storyline depending who you go and what happens and stuff. I mean, I can't imagine it's much. But, like, there's one bit where you run into a car park and my mate, I was playing with my mate Luke. We originally streamed together. We streamed it. Annoyingly, Twitch got rid of all old VODs. I wish I could have got a hold of it. And he kept running at the car park and getting caught by the police. And we were there for an hour. And I was dying laughing.
Yeah.
Because he just kept on getting us busted. And yeah, if you've got someone that really into games and really wants to give it a go, it is so much fun. There's some bits of the gameplay that are actually really good gameplay. Like when they're on the raft on the water, escaping the police on the, is it a raft or a boat? I can't remember now.
Something like that, yeah.
That's kind of almost feels like, oh, this feels a little bit like Tomb Raider-y, like it's getting somewhere, it's fun. All the stuff in the prison is like, I mean, literally a child could complete it, but it's fun. And then, yeah, but I just loved it. And also, there's a reason there's not many games like it, because obviously it's just, there's can't be, no one's buying a game that you need to play with someone else.
Right, yeah.
Because it's just a ridiculous thing to expect of someone.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah, very nice. So yeah, I mentioned in the intro in your sitcom that the second season of which aired earlier this year. It's obviously like a fictionalized sort of comedy riff on your experiences on TV, children's TV. How autobiographical did you get with the show?
Some of it's like basically exactly what happened. Like there's a bit where there is actually a clip on YouTube of me and Hacker the Dog hosting a bit of TV where the book falls off of a table and cracks Phil's head open while he's the dog.
Yeah. Katie says, I score the sewer.
But what does it mean? Ow! Oh, Ian, that hurt. That's heavier than it looks as well. Right on, Yed. Oh, Ian.
Oh, it's my last week. You're not going to have this for much longer.
And then also I'm saying, are you okay? The dog's going, I've hurt my foot. Because obviously it looks like it's actually landed on a man's head. The thing I loved about doing that sitcom was I could weirdly be the most honest I've ever been, because you get to mix up reality with fiction, which means no one ever knows. Like in terms of like, it never becomes like, if I was doing like a doc series like the Beckhams and everything becomes like clickbait in a newspaper.
Yeah, right.
Whereas no one knows where the line starts of like, did I have a horrible boss? Yes. Was it exactly like that? No. There was also bits we had to cut from the show eventually, like,
oh really? The lawyers got to it.
Yeah, just stuff, and then just stuff that was a bit, yeah, not because anyone was getting named and shamed or anything, just because they were like, this is like insane to do,
right?
And like, oh, it really happened. Like me and Hacker, because we're the BBC, and I mean this with the utmost respect, but it is just funny. We had to rehearse every year for what would happen if the Queen died. Because we're live television and we're the BBC, that is something you genuinely have to do.
But imagine if you were the one to announce it.
I literally could have told you what would have happened, because I would have, we've rehearsed it.
Would the dog stay in shot?
Well, this is the thing. Every year we had to rehearse with the dog and try and make that not offensive. So it'd be like the Queen side, and then this little dog would go, oh no! And someone would shout, cut! I remember we had an hour-long meeting, which was basically, where do you put a poppy on a dog? Because he is a presenter, so he's got to wear one. But you can't put it on his fur, because then you've got kids running, putting badges in their pets. So we had put his collar in the end, which seemed like a happy... We put it in his bowl at one point, and that felt like weirdly offensive,
right,
as well.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare.
It's good to know the puppy was remembering the fallen each year.
We rehearsed it at the end. He was going to genuinely stand in the corner facing the wall, sobbing. Sort of like Blair Witch Project.
Just would have looked sarcastic, surely.
Everything a puppet does is sarcastic. That's the problem. Once Phil got fed up, we rehearsed it so many times, he was getting so annoyed, he just went, oh, but she was so young.
Oh, jeez. So that got cut.
So while that scene got cut. That was the opening scene of the whole sitcom. And then, obviously, by that point, she was still with us.
Right, yeah.
And then, sadly, she passed. So they were like, you've got to nip that out. Okay, of course. Because I mean that with no disrespect whatsoever.
No,
it's more
course.
The situation
of
is
course.
Funny.
Yeah. Do you, so like, I think whenever a comedian or a writer returns to that early part of their career or life, you know, to sort of mine it a bit for material, there's a risk that I guess you sort of point your finger at your younger self, or you sort of betray yourself in a little way. Yeah, how do you feel about the younger you in that situation? Is it someone you feel empathy for or pride, or where are you at with it?
Yeah, I feel like... I feel like he'd done well. He was in such a rush, I felt like. I wanted to sort of be on Live at the Apollo and be a comedian and be... It wasn't about being well famous. It was about doing my own tours and big rooms and stuff. And now I've done it at 35, which to the young me would have felt forever ago. I'm now sort of thinking, bloody hell, I've already done that. I've got to keep doing... Either getting them bigger or keeping them at this size for like... 15 more years. That feels really stressful, actually.
Right.
I wouldn't have minded a bit of a run-up to it, you know? I also admire him because he, not intentionally, but I sort of foregoed, because I had kids' TV and was working and doing stand-up at the weekends, my whole 20s, I never went on like a holiday with my friends. Do you know what I mean? All my friends were going like Magaluf and that and going on the Raz and trips away to like Airbnbs in Portugal. I think I'd done that once.
And you couldn't be hungover.
Well, I could be hungover. I was in my 20s. I was still hungover every night, but I couldn't. I didn't go abroad on holidays. I didn't like go back up to Edinburgh as much as I probably could because I was filming in London. I didn't consciously do that, if you know what I mean. It was what I wanted to do. I was doing kids' TV 5 days a week and then gigging 4 nights a week. So like, what was I going to do? Whereas now I'd be a lot more aware of like my, I'd be like, no, hang on a second. Even before I had children, I'd still be like, oh, hang on a minute. I need a weekend to myself here. I never considered that in my first like 10 years, which is probably why I got to where I got to and why I've done so much stuff, because there's just not enough hours in the day otherwise.
All right, Ian, let's come to your fourth game then. So this is from 2020, is it?
Yeah. I'm going to get it the first time. It's the white door.
Welcome to our institute. We are here to help you retrieve your lost memories and bring back color to your life.
I don't know this game. What's this? What's the white door?
Are you joking? I think they're Dutch. It's the company called Rusty Lake. It's like a... It's really hard to explain, but it's sort of all done in... It's all 2D animation. They do puzzle games. They've done loads. They've got a new one out that's actually two-player. I've not played it yet. But this one, you basically start in a room. Like you're in a mental asylum. And basically, you've got to carry on having the same day every day. But like little clues pop up on the mirror and in your diary and all that. And you basically work your way out of the asylum and... back through your own thoughts and stuff, and it's like 2D penciled line drawing animations. It's really beautiful to look at, and the white door at the start is completely in black and white, and then sort of
it fills in,
changes. I don't want to ruin it for anyone, but sort of changes it as it goes on, and it's like, again, quite quick to complete, which is great if you're on a schedule. It's really, if you've never played a Rusty Lake game before, it's nothing like you've ever played before in your life. You could pick any of them. They're all good. I think the White Door is my favourite, but there's loads.
Oh, sweet. Well, I will get on that. That sounds great.
It is brilliant. It's really good. All the Rusty Lake stuff. And it's probably like, there's probably like the smallest company that I'm going to like big up in this list. I didn't want to go like too, it's hard, isn't it? Because I play hundreds of video games. So I wanted to, part of me went, oh, I want to go niche and get some, another part of me went, well, but now I have got, like, you can't, I don't know how anyone can have a list of the best five games and not have The Last of Us in it. Like, it's sort of impossible. But then I've not got, like, you know, I've not got some stuff that you would think you've got to have. Like, I've not got a Final Fantasy in it.
It's all right. You back your console, Ian. It's good stuff, man.
I'm happy with my list, don't get me wrong. But I want to say I'm aware that there's no Mario on this. I'm aware of that.
Don't worry about that. Mario will be fine.
I'm sure someone else can pick Mario Kart for the 20th time.
Exactly, yeah. So I loved your season of Taskmaster, Ian.
Oh, thank you.
You came across as quite a competitive young man, I'd say. But perhaps the first time we've seen that side of you on TV. How do you reflect on that experience?
Taskmaster is a TV show that is as fun to watch as it is to be on. Do you know, you watch like an action film, you're like, imagine being Gandalf, that must be amazing. And then you just see like Ian McKellen in a green screen going, you shall not pass. And then he has to do it 95 times. It's actually the worst thing to do in the world ever. Taskmaster is exactly like it looks on television. They're so clever at making it that fun for the people in it. The competitive thing I slightly regret, in that I am quite competitive in real life, but I also thought it would be funny. And actually, weirdly, for a stand-up that's on a lot of telly, I hadn't done a lot of panel shows. So I was new to the world of panel shows.
It's not really a typical panel show anyway, is it?
Yeah, and you do two episodes a day. So if you watch that series, I think about the first six episodes, which is 3 days, I think I go mad competitive. And I think I have a sort of thing, a realisation, I'm like, I think this is a bit much. And then the next sort of like, do you mean the next few days, I'm not right. like that, if that yeah, makes yeah, sense. Yeah. So I was basically that. The only thing, and I don't regret it, because I think it's a brilliant series, and like Paul Sinha in Taskmaster is maybe one of the funniest things to happen to Taskmaster. He's got to be up there in your top 10 or whatever. He's just brilliant at, he's so brilliantly bad at it. And I loved like, me and Lou have been gigging together for years. We know each other really well. We've like got the same management. I've been on her podcast talking about Taskmaster. We get on really well. And like, I met Joe, who obviously in between us was like the soundtrack of my university. So like, yeah. Sort of wild. Shan, she's the nicest person. So it's brilliant. I think the only thing I think is like, I'm slightly annoyed that it was such a high profile thing to do. And I picked those 3 days to be the most competitive I've been in my entire life. It's sort of a bit, do you know what I mean? If I'd done it on like one podcast that a few people listened to, it'd be fine. But the sort of thing that defines me now is me screaming at Lou Sanders on a hammock. And I'm like, I'm not that. I wasn't, for the record, like obviously I wanted to win that challenge, but I wasn't that bothered. Like the funny thing is, like after that challenge, me, Lou and Paul were working all day together. So like a few people have said to me, like, oh, you three hated each other. I was like, we literally finished that and then walked into our room and had lunch and we didn't even give it a second thought. Do you know what I mean? At no point did we think, oh, that's going to go down in Taskmaster folklore now.
Yeah, yeah.
We just thought we'd done a task badly.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's honour to be. So what, I've not been on many shows that I watch myself, if you know what I mean.
Mm-mm, sure.
Alex and Greg are so lovely. And like I said, it is, and I'm not just saying this, but it is genuinely as fun to be on it as it is to watch it, which is an incredible testament to that show, really.
Yeah. Well, I think even at your most competitive on that show, you're still not as competitive as Ed Gamble comes across. So it's all good.
I think that's probably the most tweeted thing I get when I was on Twitter was basically like me, Ed Gamble, and like Rod Gilbert and James Acaster should have like an angry person Taskmaster right, special. Yeah. It would be intolerable.
Yeah,
like,
unwatchable.
Just us screaming.
Right, Ian, we better come to your fifth and your final game then. So, yeah, tell us about this one, a game from earlier this year.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think it will make the list in years to come. But obviously, I'm 50 hours in and still not completed it. And I'm very much a main mission, ignore side quests unless you need to level up for certain bosses. It's Hogwarts Legacy. It's in no way endorsement of the Harry Potter novels in any way whatsoever. I just love the game, and I think it is the most. It might be a coincidence that I've just got a new monitor, but it is the most beautiful game I've ever played. I'm not a huge Harry Potter fan, and even in the opening scene when you're on the train and you come in and you see Hogwarts emerge from the mist and all that, I was like, ooh, dead excited. The control, have you played it?
I haven't actually, no.
The controls are slightly annoying when you're in the, like, running around the house. It's got that sort of, do you remember Bully?
I do, yeah, yeah. Rockstar game.
where you just would like back, like running through walls, doors was annoying. She'd always catch the edge of the wall and stuff. It's got that sort of vibe about it. But other than that, like, honestly, flawless, man. Like, it's absolutely flawless. It's got that Witcher element where you've got to go and, like, brew the right potions to get the right thing and all that, which I found annoying, but on this, I don't. The gameplay really reminds me of, do you remember all the Lord of the Rings games, like the Two Towers and all that? It's got that. It's the same sort of game engine as that, which I love. Storylines a bit convoluted, but really engaging. Characters are really again fun, engaging, and there's enough like Harry Potter folklore in it that you're like, oh, that's a bit of fun. Do you know what I mean? Like one of the headmasters, a Weasley, you're like, oh yeah, I know Ron, like, do you know what I mean? But yeah, just look, but it looks incredible, and it's like the size of the world and stuff is amazing. So yeah, like, yeah. And the I think the game mechanics and the look of it saves the sort of storyline and the characters, basically. It's like basically the opposite of Last of Us, but Last of Us has not got bad gameplay, so it doesn't really work, the analogy. So I'll stop talking.
Right, and let's go through your console then. So we've got The Last of Us Remastered, FIFA 17, very particularly 17, A Way Out, The White Door, and Hogwarts Legacy. There we go.
Though, just very quickly before we go, I've just realised this is a sort of like I'm on my own with this console. Yeah. I can't play A Way Out.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have to give you some. Well, we'll get that Ethernet going through your wall.
Yeah. All right. I've got a sort of AI machine to play along with.
I'm sure you can have a friend. It doesn't have to be a machine.
I'd love to play a game with my friend Luke, actually.
All right, we'll bundle in Luke with every copy of your console. We need a name for your console to market to the world. Ian, have you got any thoughts of what we might call it on the spot?
Do you know what? We'll call it Final Fantasy VII, and that way I've acknowledged that game exists as well, because it was one of the ones that just missed the list.
People might be upset that the game's not on there, but never mind. Maybe there's a...
Yeah, imagine buying the console Final Fantasy VII and you have to play A Way Out. You'd be absolutely devastated.
Oh, great. Ian, thanks so much for your time on this. I've got just one last question before I let you go. I don't know, I wrote this at the weekend. I hope it's not an annoying question. You've got a young daughter. What advice might you give to her if in a few years she said that she wanted to appear on a reality TV show? Would you be like, definitely don't do that? Or
what a great question.
Is it, though? I don't know.
Well, I think it was a difficult one, isn't it? Because reality TV is such a wide-ranging thing now. Because, like, I watched something like that Beckham documentary. It's like,
right.
Beautiful, right? As in, I don't mean like, oh, he's so, what a man. I mean more like the way he cheated on his wife, but they all stayed together. I just mean, like, it can be so many different facets. I guess my advice to my daughter for not reality TV, but for anything, is do what makes you happy. Mm-hmm. That would be it. And always but tell your dad everything. Be truthful.
Well, maybe
do what makes you happy and be truthful. Yeah,
that's good advice
to me.
To you, maybe you'll be doing the voiceover, so she won't need to be truthful.
My daughter is by the pool. Imagine if I was doing it for that long. Oh my god, that'd be the year. That would be the year to quit. Not for other reason. Like, you've been doing it long enough now.
Thank you so much for your time on this, and I really, really hope that the tour goes gangbusters next year. I'm sure it will. So, yeah.
Cheers, Simon. I really appreciate your time, mate. Thank you so much. I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. Oh, thank you so much to my guest, Ian Sterling. What a lot of fun that was. Oh my gosh, I enjoyed that conversation a lot. Ian, as we discussed at the beginning of that conversation, is heading out on tour in the spring of 2024, so just a couple of months after this episode will come out. That tour starts on the 20th of March 2024, so you've got plenty of time to pick up some tickets. It kicks off in Northampton at Royal and Durngate Theatre, and then he's heading to Sheffield, Lincoln, Crewe, Birmingham, Belfast and Dublin. And it goes right through into April. He's going all around the country, from Glasgow to Southend, Canterbury to Norwich, Cheltenham to Hull, Leeds, Newcastle, York. Anyway, if you're listening to this in the UK, and probably about a third of listeners to My Favourite Console from the UK, maybe slightly more than that, then you've got a chance to go see Ian. If that's not you and you're listening in another country and you're not able to get over here to listen to the iconic voice of ITV's Love Island, then you can catch lots of Ian Sterling content online. Head to his website, iandoesjokes.com. That's Ian with two I's, I-A-I-N, Sterling. So iandoesjokes.com, you can find out what Ian is up to. He's got tons of stuff on YouTube. You can hop on to watch Taskmaster. What's that on these days? I think it's on Netflix, certainly on Channel 4's app if you're in the UK. Lots of ways to watch Taskmaster. Anyway, Ian's in the 8th series of that, a really, really good series, so you should watch that and watch his transformation from a hyper-competitive online gamer boy through to the slightly more relaxed Ian Sterling that we see in the second half of that show. It's all really, really good fun. And yeah, as I also mentioned in that, Ian is on Twitch. He regularly streams himself playing the game formerly known as FIFA. So yeah, you can... I'm just rapidly trying to... type this into Google as I'm speaking, but yeah, he's on Ian Sterling. Here it is. He's just Ian Sterling. That's easy, isn't it? So twitch.tv, and you can watch him on Ian Sterling. You can catch previous sessions he's done. I mean, if you're gonna have to be into football if you want to watch that, but that seems to be the only thing that he streams. But yeah, if you're into football, EA Sports FC 24 it is, isn't it? What a mouthful. Anyway, you can watch Ian playing that on Twitch anytime you like. Right, we have now entered the if you're listening to this the week it's come out, then we are in round 3 of the My Perfect Console of the Year knockout competition. It's all hotting up. Round 3, there are just now 8 face-offs. So 16 consoles. This is the all of the previous guests on My Perfect Console from 2023. There's been sort of over the past previous few weeks, there's been a few round face-offs that you the public have been able to vote on for your favorite consoles. It's been whittling down and whittling down. We're now down to the top 16. So yeah, as I said, 8 face-offs. You're able to vote in that. Everyone is able to, whether you are a supporter on Patreon or just a member of the public. We're very welcome to have you either way. But yeah, if you head to patreon.com/myperfectconsole, there'll be a pinned post at the top there with a link, and you can go and you can vote for your 8 favourites out of the 16 options. And then, yeah, next week we'll be down to, what is it, the semi-finals, right? No, quarter-finals, then the semi-finals, and then the final face-off. So yeah, round 3 is the last one that the public is going to be able to vote in. Thereafter, it will just be for Patreon supporters. So if you'd like to become a supporter, now's a really good time. It's just £4.50 a month, or like $5 a month, something like that. The cost of a magazine, and for that you're getting, 4-5 hours of lovely audio, plus some bonus content. You get to be part of the Patreon community, and... yeah, lots of nice little bonuses like that. So yeah, please consider doing that. It's a great way to support the podcast. Yeah, we're now right coming up to the end of the year. We've got just 2 more guests, I think. Then we're going to do some best of clip shows. Maybe 1, maybe 2, not quite sure. I mean, there's lots to pick between, so maybe we'll get 2 out of it. So that would be just some clips from previous guests in the year, and then we'll be heading into year 2 of My Perfect Console. I'll let you know all the details for that a little bit nearer the time, but yeah, it's going to be a good time. If you'd like to write to me suggesting some guests for next year, please do so. It's myperfectconsole@gmail.com. Can't promise we'll get everyone, but yeah, got a pretty good hit rate. Lots of people want to come on the show now, which is lovely. And so, yeah, if you've got some people that you'd like to hear from that you think would be well suited to the format, then please do let me know. Right. So next week's guest is Josh Scher. He is one of the writers on The Last of Us and The Uncharted. So these are the video games. He worked at Naughty Dog for many, many years, started there, I think, on Jack and Daxter. And then worked on Uncharted and then on The Last of Us. and has more recently left and moved on to a new startup studio where he's working on a new IP there. Josh is a really fantastic guy, really open, thoughtful person on video games, and gives us loads of lovely details on the process of writing, coming up with characters like Nathan Drake and Joel and Ellie, and what it was like as well to release a major blockbuster video game, The Last of Us Part 2, during the pandemic lockdowns. So yeah, lots to look forward to there if you're a fan of those games, and even if you're not, and just interested to hear some of the creative process that goes into them. All right, I'll be back again then next week with Josh and his five games and one more perfect console.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.